I'm going to have a real hard time following all of that. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. By the way, my class on Wednesday night starts at 6:30. 6:30, if you want to be here to hear Dale. He's going to be talking about Christ in the Old Testament. That's going to be his subject. And I'm sure there will be some time for some Q&A. He loves Q&A. He is a freak. I'm telling you, he's a freak. He quotes Leviticus. Who quotes Leviticus? Oh, it's something else. We're going to continue our series, If It Is To Be, It's Up To Me. We've been talking for this is the fifth week. The first week we talked about goal setting and how important it is as Christians for us to set goals. It is a spiritual responsibility that we have. If you never set a goal, you never accomplish much. When you set those goals, you can look at those goals, you can examine those goals, you can measure progress towards those goals, and you can reach those goals. I believe God expects us to set goals in our life. The Apostle Paul had a goal. He wanted to be conformed to the image of Christ. That was his goal. He says, I strive toward that. And you know, goal setting is not easy to do, but it's easy not to do. And it's something that you work at every single day. One of the things that the Bible calls us as Christians, it calls us disciples. And that word means discipline. And we don't like discipline. We like it E-A-Z-Y. How about E-A-S-Y? We like it easy. But nothing worth anything in life is easy, is it? It's something that we strive for. We do it in business. Well, you know, when children go to school, they have a goal. They want to graduate. We always have goals in life. Why don't we have spiritual goals? Why don't we transform our lives around goals so that we can become all that we should be for God? We talked about the spirit of man. We talked about the soul of man, the mind, how it's our responsibility to renew our minds and to feed our minds and to grow in our minds. God has given us a wonderful capacity through our brain that you can exhaust in one lifetime. And yet we don't hear a lot about mental exercise or mental growing. We need to grow mentally. Christians should be the smartest people in the world. Then we talked about the emotions and how we need to learn to manage the emotions, how we need to find a balance in our soul is mind, will, and emotions, how we need to find the balance, how that we don't need to be just ruled by one aspect of our personality, how that we need to be cognitive, we need to be able to reason and not be just driven by emotion, but yet we don't want to be unemotional, and yet we don't want to be stubborn. We want a balance in our whole man so that we can learn to make rational, willful, and emotional decisions on a solid ground. How many times have you seen people do things emotionally and then they're moved by emotion, kind of like the reverend up here? I've seen some reverends that know how to manipulate people to give, to do certain things that normally they would not do. I mean, how many get-rich-quick schemes have you seen that manipulate people? They appeal to greed or they appeal to need and they get people involved in something that the only person that's going to profit from it is the person selling the product. We need to be smarter than that. I said we need to be smarter than that. There is no get rich quick schemes. It's get rich slow. If you're going to get rich, you're probably going to get rich slow. And you're going to do it by setting goals, sowing towards those goals, here a little, there a little, and over a long period of time, and then you can build success financially. And so, you know, we can learn to do that. Today we're going to talk about the body. The body. I want to read some scripture, then we're going to get into it. I'm going to say some controversial things today, just so that you know. Controversy. I'm going to say some things that may sound political, but they're not political. They have taken some of the things that we're going to talk about today and made it a political thing, but it is not a political thing. It is a biblical thing. It has to do with function. 1 Corinthians chapter 6, 19. Do you not know that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit who is in you, whom you have from God? You are not your own, for you were bought at a price. Therefore, glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. What belongs to God? Your body does. Your spirit does. You belong to God. When you make Jesus Christ Lord of your life, you belong to Him. You don't belong to yourself. In fact, even non-Christians don't realize it, but what they have is on loan. God gave us our bodies. It belongs to God. Some people don't give it to Him. They manage their own. They use it the way they want to. And they totally disregard what God says. We have to be careful about that as Christians. If we want to live out the Christian life the way that it is designed, we need to understand purpose. We need to understand why we're supposed to live this way. Why we're supposed to live this way. And I want to say this right now. It is not easy to walk this way. It's not. People say, well, Christianity is a crutch. If you walk it like you're supposed to walk it, it's a challenge. I'm not talking about earning your way to heaven. Heaven is a free gift. But glorifying God in your life is a challenge. There's some dumb people out there that just make you just want to lose it sometimes. Sometimes you want to be hateful. Sometimes you want to get revenge. Sometimes you want to jack some jaws. Sometimes you want to give people a piece of your mind. And you need all the minds you can get. But what I'm saying is, living in this hostile world that we live in that is not Christian friendly, it's a challenge to walk out the gospel. It's a challenge. And we have a good example. It's called Jesus Christ. He's the only example that we have, really, that did it successfully. So, Romans 12:1 says, I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice. Next word is holy. H-O-L-Y, not W-H-O-L-Y. Holy. God expects us to present our bodies to Him. Now, He don't want dead bodies. He don't want a dead body burning on an altar. He wants a live body burning with passion in its heart towards God. And to live its life in such a way that is honoring and pleasing unto God. Holy. Now, holy doesn't mean perfect. Holy means set apart. That you live by a different principle than what the world lives by. See, the world treats everything like they own it. It's my body. I'll do with it what I want to. It's my mind. I'll put in there what I want to. No, it's not. And especially we who call ourselves followers of Christ, we need to realize that we have a higher mandate to live a particular way in which will be glorifying to God. Our mission in life is to love God, enjoy Him fully, and to glorify Him in our life. We are salt and light in this world. We have been called to make a difference through our lifestyle to this world, to model what a Christian life looks like. Amen. Okay. So we're going to deal with some things. I want to talk about something that kind of ties this all together. In science, there is this. In fact, they've used this in to kind of deal with evolution. Evolution is taught in all of our schools that we evolve from species to species to species to species. And that something became something that became something that finally became a human, and that's who you are. But there's this concept, Michael Behe framed this, it's called irreducible complexity. And it says, irreducible complexity is a term used to describe a characteristic of a certain complex systems whereby they need all of their individual component parts in place in order to function. Now, evolution kind of says, well, this started like this, and then this evolved into this. But irreducible complexity says that whatever this is, it has to be intact, all together, all functioning for it to work. Otherwise, it collapses. Now, I got a picture I want to show you. It's a mousetrap. Mousetrap. There we go. Mousetrap. See that mousetrap? It is irreducibly complex. You take away, you got a platform, you got a catch, you got a spring, you got a hammer, you got a hole bar. If you take away any piece of that mousetrap, guess what you're not going to do? You're not going to catch a mouse. It will not work. You take the spring away, guess what? The hammer will lay there. You put the spring there but don't have the hammer, guess what? The spring may spring, but it's not going to catch a mouse. It will not work. It will not work as designed. So one of the things that this irreducible complexity talks about is it teaches intelligent design. That it didn't evolve into that, that it couldn't evolve into that, because it all had to be present for it to function. Did that evolve? That somebody designed that, didn't they? So it is irreducibly complex. Now, the other picture. This is something in our bodies, and it's called flagella. If you look at it, it has to do with our cells. And you see the little tail on it? That's called the flagella. And if you look at it, it is a motor. There's a motor in there. In fact, it is made up the same way that an outboard motor is made. And this is how the cells move inside our bodies. They have this little tail, and that tail is like a propeller, and it propels itself through our bodies. If any aspect of that flagella is not there, the whole thing will not function. In fact, one of the greatest illustrations of this is the sperm cell. The sperm cell has this flagella in it that it swims in the woman's body and it finds the egg and reproduction takes place. But if that's not there, if there's one component of that thing is not there, it will not function. It is irreducibly complex. Well, let me just say, so are we. We're spirit, we're soul, we're body. What happens if the spirit is not there? What does the body do? It dies. It's dead. James tells us the spirit is dead without the body. All three have to be functioning together in order for us to be what we're supposed to be. And here's the thing about it. We are the ones that are to manage this. God has given us this great life. God has given us and put within us everything that we need to function. But it's up to us to make sure it happens. See, if it is to be, it's up to me. It's up to me. It's not up to you. It's not up to me to make you. It's up to you. I have hard enough time with me. I'll just be honest. I have a hard time with me. And I'm going to expose some things about myself today that I particularly don't like doing. But I'm going to do that since we're talking about the body. But I'm going to talk about three aspects of the body. One has to do with purpose. The next one has to do with morals. And the third one has to do with taking care of our bodies. Because I think that we have a stewardship to manage in those three areas of life. And that is purpose, our function, and then our moral, because it said present it, what? Holy. How do I do it holy? I do it God's way. And then I've got to take care of what I've been entrusted with. This is not my body. Okay? This is on loan. And one of these days, we're going to give an account for the deeds that are done in the body. We will give an account. We're not talking about heaven and hell issues, but we're talking about things that are important. Stewardship is important to God. Managing what He has put at our disposal is important to God. And it needs to be important to us. Okay, so let's talk first about purpose. One of the greatest purpose of the human body was revealed in Genesis chapter 1. After God made man and woman, excuse me while I overcome here. One of the first things that He said to them, He brought them together. In fact, that was the first marriage. That was the first marriage. He brought Adam and Eve together. They were together their whole lives. They were committed to each other. He set up the whole concept of leaving, and there wasn't anybody to leave there, but leaving father and mother and cleaving to your wife. So this whole concept of marriage and family started there. And the thing that He says is, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. One of our greatest responsibilities is to do that, to be fruitful with our bodies, to be fruitful with our bodies. In other words, He intended for Adam and Eve to have His children. Now, before the fall, they would have been children. Everybody would have been children of God. He said, I want you to have my children. I want you to have my family. He gave responsibility to them to nurture those children and raise them in a healthy environment. So our purpose primarily is reproduction within the context of the thing that He designed it to be. Can I just tell you, and this is controversial, I know, and this is not political at all, even though it has been made a political deal. All of that stuff you saw on TV last week of all of the protest, 90% of it was about women's rights to abort their children. Can I just say that is totally against the purpose of why our bodies were given to us. I believe in women's rights. I believe that women should have every right that a man has. But where does that stop? When it comes to the taking of another human life. Now, why is that important? For two reasons. Our bodies were designed to be fruitful. Secondly, you and I are created in the image and the likeness of God. Mankind, not animals, are in the likeness, in the image of God. See, I believe that the moment that sperm with that flagellum swims through there, connects with that egg, life begins. You have a human being there. One that is totally dependent on the protection of that mother. until that child can be separated from its mother's womb. That child will never die. Ladies, I know some of you have lost children or lost, have aborted pregnancy. I'm talking about not abortion. Miscarriage. Yeah, thank you. I know some of you, that's happened to some of you. Can I just tell you, I believe that you'll see that child in heaven. I believe that with all my heart. My mom had some miscarriages. I believe I got a brother or sister, at least one, up there in heaven that I'll meet one day that never had a chance to live on this earth. There are no accidents. There's none of those. And we're going to see millions and millions and millions of children that have been aborted. They're going to be in heaven. Thank God for that. And I'm not down on women who have had abortions at all. But I am against abortion. And this is why. Because those children are in the likeness and the image of God. And we're the only creature that can bring forth that kind of being. And that is part of our function as human beings. So it's not political. I promise you, it's not political. But it is a God thing. It's a God thing. Here's the second. Let's talk about the moral aspect of it. How are we to live our lives out? It says, holy and acceptable unto God. We do not need to live our lives apart from God's way. I do not have a right to say, you know what, this is my body. I will do with it what I want to do because it is my body. You can live that way if you choose to live that way, but you are leaving the function and the moral compass that God has put in our hearts. We're going against design when we do that. When we abuse our bodies, when we use bodies, when we do things like that, we are totally going against the reason that we have physical bodies. I've heard people say, you know what? I'll sleep with who I want to sleep with. Okay, you can do that. We're consenting adults. We're both consenting. Can I just tell you, if you're a Christian, you may consent, they may consent, but the one who owns the body does not consent. Yeah, but it's my body. No, it's not. No, it's not. It's not your body. It's not your body to do with what you please. You belong to God. And that needs to, when we understand that, that should change the way that we see life, the way that we walk life, the way that we live it out. Can I just tell you, you will never regret doing things God's way. And I'm not judging people. I know people all the time that do things. But I'm just telling you, that's not the way you're designed to be. Do it God's way. We mess up when we do that. We cause problems when we do that. Okay, let me move out of that. There's other areas that we could have talked about, but any way that we physically hurt or harm other people goes totally against two commandments. Love God with all your heart. Love your neighbor as yourself. That is the function of the spirit, soul, and body. That's how we're going to have impact in the world, is learning how to love God first, putting God first, and then out of that flows the way that we treat other people. I do not have the right to use another human being for my own purposes. If I do that, then I'm wrong. And I'm not talking sexually there. I'm talking about in general. If I manipulate people, if I do that for my own purpose, then I am wrong. I am using my mental and my physical qualities to do that. Then I am wrong. And we don't need to live that way. Okay, let's talk about this one. This is where I get in trouble. Taking care of the body. I have struggled for years with taking care of the body. I have been convicted. I have done diets, lost weight, gained it back. Probably in my life, I have lost and gained a couple hundred pounds, more than some of you weigh. I always knew that I was supposed to take care of this. At one time, I weighed 287 pounds. That's a big boy, I'm telling you. We took a picture. This is before my dad passed away. We were at my house sitting on a hearth, and I was sitting there, and they took a picture, and I couldn't believe how I looked. I mean, I was large. My blood pressure was 160 over 120. I was headed for a stroke. I knew I had to do something. And I've walked for years. I've exercised for years, but I didn't eat right. I went to the doctor, and he said something about exercise. I said, I do exercise. He said, listen, exercise alone will not do it. You have to eat right and exercise. So he put me on blood pressure medication. It brought my blood pressure under control. So I got on my high horse, and I started eating right and doing right, and I lost 70 pounds. I got down to 215. And then I kind of slipped off of it. And then, first thing you know, I start inching up, inch. Now I'm back up to 265. So last year, first of the year, I said, okay, I've got to do something, because my blood pressure starts going back up. I'm a candidate for a stroke, living that way. And besides that, I'm taking something that God has given me, and I am treating it like I own it. And I don't. I don't have... It's morally wrong for me to treat my body this way. So I had to have a change of thinking. So back in January, I joined the gym and began to work out, and I walked, and I ate somewhat right, and I dropped a few pounds. And this lady handed me a book one day, said, I want you to read this. It's called Prescription for Life. It was written by a heart surgeon who talked about how to have heart cardiovascular health, how to take care of your heart, your lungs, and your vascular system, your veins, your arteries, and how to keep them clean. He was a heart surgeon, so he had operated on lots of people that had this difficulty. And he had this prescription for life, and it was kind of 3-point. You exercise, you eat heart healthy. I was glad to hear the ladies are going to have the heart healthy thing here. And then you get to your ideal weight, and then you live that way for the rest of your life. That part I don't like much. I mean, I don't enjoy, but, you know, losing the weight, you feel good. But, hey, but you want to go back to eat like you did, or you want to cheat a lot. Well, I can't cheat. I mean, chocolate levitates off of the thing and heads toward my mouth. Cheeseburgers do that too. So I had to make a decision. So in April, after I read this book, I determined that I was going to change this, and it was something that I was going to have to live with for the rest of my life. So I went on this, and from January to October, I think I lost 52 pounds. But here's the rub. Here's the question. Is this something that I can live with from now on? Because I have been on Fen-Phen. I've been on the liquid diets. I've been on Atkins diet. I've been on this diet. I've been on that diet. Can I just tell you, diets do not work. When somebody says, I'm going on a diet. No, you don't need to go on a diet. You got to have lifestyle change. And I applaud. There's several people in our church, and I've seen them post on Facebook that they're learning to eat right, and they're taking control of their health by right eating. So we don't need to do it with pills. We need to do it with a fork. Okay? We need to learn what to eat and what not to eat. And listen, you have to find something that you can live with. The way I eat, you may not eat. But, mine is heart health. And I've got two reasons that I want this to be. And this is part of my goal that I look at. And these are the reasons that motivate me to do this. Number one, I've already said it, because my body don't belong to me. It belongs to God. That's one of the reasons that I post every day when I walk my 3 miles. I put it on Twitter and it posts it to Facebook. It keeps me accountable. It keeps me accountable. And, I try to go to the gym 4 times a week. I walk 5 times a week, and I watch what I eat every day. So I do that to keep me accountable. As I do that, I have a reason behind it. My body belongs to God. But here's another reason. I was not fortunate to know my grandfathers. And my dad's dad died when he was 16. My other grandfather died when I was 5. I have one memory of him. But I was fortunate to have a great grandfather. He died when he was 92. Hey, my grandmother died when she was in her 90s. See, I've got the DNA to live a long time. What I can't afford to do is destroy my body. But my great-grandfather was a great old man. He loved God. He loved his family. He lived in Ash Flat. My dad owned a grocery store in Ash Flat, and sometimes we'd go with him on Saturdays, and we'd say, "Let's go see Grandpa Ansel." He wore this little derby hat and, suspenders, and we'd go see him, and he was always so glad to see us, and he just talked about Jesus like they were best friends. He glowed with the presence of God. He glowed with the presence of God. His wife died. And a little bit later, he married a lady called, her name was Fanny. We called her Granny Fanny. We'd go see Grandpa, and he and Granny Fanny would be sitting on the porch and holding hands and making Google eyes. They're talking about 90, making Google eyes at each other. And they would be talking about Jesus and singing hymns. You know what? That just did something to my heart that I never got over. And I can't. When I think about going to heaven, that's who I want to see. And I want to thank him for planting that seed in me, because it made a difference. But you know what? I owe a debt. I told my grandson the other day, Ethan and I were talking. I said, "You know what, Ethan? You know why I eat right? You know why I'm exercising? Because someday I want to see your children. And I want to be able to speak into their lives. And I want to be able to be a blessing to them. I want to pay back." And that's at least 20 years down the road, probably. And I want to be able to influence them later. I want to be able to, I thought about this. I want to be able to hold them in my hands when they're born and say, "Child, I walked 11,000 miles to see you." Because in 15 years, at 3 miles a day, I've walked about 11,000 miles to see them. Now that keeps me going. that keeps me motivated. So we have to have reasons to be motivated to do things. Number one, it needs to be a God thing. But sometimes it's a family thing. I owe a debt to my family. I owe a debt to those that lived before me that were Christian. And they passed it to their children, and to my dad, and to me, and to my children, and my grandchildren, and my great-grandchildren. We have to pass the faith from generation to generation.
Amen.
So we need to take our stewardship. Oh, I didn't want to blubber like this. We need to take our stewardship serious. Now, I want to say some things. I watched my dad die. I was standing at his side. 1999. My dad smoked for 50 years. He smoked 3 and 4 packs a day for 50, not that whole time, but sometimes he smoked 3 and 4 packs a day, and he smoked for 50 years from the time that he was 16 years old until he had a stroke in 1999. He gave it up, but he'd already damaged his body. He'd already just devastated his lungs and everything. He had COPD. I saw my dad suffer. I saw what he went through. I saw the heart surgeries that he had to have because of smoking, and the arteries that were stopped up because of smoking, and the different things that happened in his life, the COPD, and saw him go from a very strong, independent man to almost a helpless person because of smoking. I'm so glad that I quit smoking when I was a teenager. I wished he had. My dad was 83 when he died. He should have lived another 10 years. But smoking killed him. And I'm not saying this judgmentally. I'm saying this out of love. If you smoke cigarettes, if you smoke tobacco, you need to do everything that you can do to get off of it. There is not one thing that it adds to your life. It will destroy your health. It's as bad as other things. In fact, it's worse. It probably kills more people than anything else. So I challenge you today. It's a stewardship thing. It's a stewardship thing. Do all you can, whatever it takes, to get rid of that habit. Our bodies are the temple of God, and we need to treat them that way. Is it a heaven and hell issue? No. It's a stewardship issue. Is it an issue that God will have a conversation with us about? It is. See, I still have struggles in other areas. I'm a coffee drinker. I can drink gallons of coffee. I have to watch that. I have to watch that. I'm learning to limit myself. I've sat down at lunch and had 7 cups of coffee. Well, I don't need to do that. Why? Because it's harmful to my body. Now, coffee's good. Coffee's good for you, but not 10 gallons a day. So, I mean, we need to learn how to live our lives in such a way and remember that we're stewards of something that God has given us. Amen. Are you glad that's over?
No.
So if it is to be, it's up to me. Stand, let's sing. Prayer team, come. Somebody might need to pray after. Now listen, don't come up here and ask, pray for me that I lose all this weight right now. No. You put it on, it comes off slow. So if you need prayer today, please come.